Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode. Do you know anyone in your world who suffers from osteoarthritis? Do you maybe have the beginning stages of arthritis in your joints, in knees, hips, fingers, hands? Does it run in your family? If you've said yes to any of these questions, or if you know anyone who has osteoarthritis, you are going to want to listen to this episode. Today, I get to interview Dr. Elizabeth Yerth. She is an amazing doctor, honestly. She is the medical director of the Boulder Longevity Institute, which she co-founded in 2006. And they specialize in all the amazing advanced research-based longevity medicine treatments you can imagine, including BHRT, peptides, and much, much more. Dr. Yerth is also a fellow of the mastermind, the SSRP mastermind, which is the SEED Scientific Research and Performance, and she's part of the faculty there. So she not only learns from Dr. Seeds, but she actually teaches others in this emerging field of cellular medicine. And on top of that, Dr. Yerth comes to this space as an athlete herself, and she has also consulted with numerous sports teams, which includes the San Francisco 49ers, the Stanford University women's basketball and soccer, and she served as the physician for the San Jose Cleveland Ballet. Needless to say, Dr. Yerth is really qualified to be talking about this topic, and we had a great conversation. And of course, we didn't just talk about peptides. We talk about the reasons why people get osteoarthritis in the first place, what people might be able to do to mitigate their risk, and how to manage it once you have it. And we talk also about some of the different supplements that might really make an impact on this condition, and even pairing them with some of the treatments that Dr. Yerth and other doctors in the space offer, including stem cell treatment. So there's other supplements you can use alongside that, one of which we've talked about a lot over the next few months, and I think you're going to be hearing a lot more about, and that is spermidine. So it's a really good episode. It's packed full of great gems. So if you get value from this episode, as always, please leave us a comment. Make sure to share it with your network, with your friends and family, anybody who you think would also get value from it. If you want to reach out to Dr. Yerth to work with her or to do a consult, you can find her at theboulderlongevityinstitute.com. And if you're looking to connect with me, you can find me through my website, which is natnidham.com. And you can find me on MeWe in the Biohacking Superhuman Performance group. I still have a group on Facebook by the same name, Biohacking Superhuman Performance. However, that group, I'm slowly starting to phase it out and move it over to MeWe. So if you really want to connect, come on over to MeWe. It's a great platform. It's free to you guys. And I have to pay a little bit to keep the group there. But honestly, it's worth every penny because we get to talk about whatever we want. And what else? You can find me on Instagram. And other than that, I'm just going to stop yammering here and let you get on with the show. So enjoy the episode and let me know what you think.
Welcome back, Betsy Yerth, Dr. Betsy Yerth. It is such a pleasure to have you back on the show today.
Thank you for having me. We just sat here and chatted for your listeners. It took us about an hour to get here because we sat here and chatted for an hour beforehand. But that's what happens when you and I get together. But I always love coming and talking to you.
Yeah, no, this is so exciting. And today's topic is such a great topic. I mean, all the topics are great, let's face it. But today we're talking about arthritis. We're talking about the cartilage and how, and actually you just put it so beautifully at the beginning of this podcast. And this is how arthritis is an immune disease, not a you've run too many kilometers disease. So we're going to talk about that. Do you, you've had some transitions in your professional life lately. Do you want to talk about that at all? Like you've made some moves and.
Sure. I will briefly talk about that. So, you know, this talk on arthritis to me is, it's my passion. because what my background is orthopedics. And, you know, really it was 15 years ago in my orthopedic realm that I was like, geez, all I do is kind of patch somebody together and they never really actually get better. They just sort of start this downhill turn and they're back again with something else, or that shoulder that we fixed is now a little worse and a little worse until somebody replaces it. And so about 15 years ago, that's why I really left, you know, didn't leave, but learned a whole new type of medicine. And for the past 15 years, I've been practicing both medicines. So I have my orthopedic practice and I have my more functional medicine, longevity, cellular medicine practice at Boulder Longevity. And I've kind of tried to bridge the two and keep them somewhat separate. And really just 2 weeks ago now, I decided I really couldn't practice at the orthopedic clinic anymore and realistically feel like I was being ethically and morally right to my patients or myself, because people would come in and I'd had 15 minutes and there's no way I could explain the things we're going to talk about in terms of helping them heal and get better. And so I would do the same things over and over again where, you know, people would come in with their arthritic knees or their horrible back and with every disc worn out. And I'd say, okay, well, we can stick some steroids in it and we can do this. And I would sort of secretly on the side say to him, well, we could try some peptides and we could try some hormone therapy and we could try and, you know, get your body better in balance. But I had 5 minutes and you can't explain this in 5 minutes. And so I really made the choice that it wasn't appropriate to sit there and practice a medicine that I no longer really was so engaged in. And now I'm doing my orthopedic clinic combined with my functional medicine clinic. And so I can have my orthopedic patients come in and we can sit down for an hour and talk about, well, how do we actually make you better? Because that's what's going to honestly help your knee to heal. And so this is my passion. I think that when you look at osteoarthritis, you know, we talk about all these diseases, right? We talk about cancer and all these diseases of aging and dementia and all the things that you and I are trying to stave off. And arthritis gets a little bit pushed to the background. It's not going to kill us, or argue it's not going to kill us. It might. I look at somebody like my dad who recently passed away. Really, honestly, his horrible knee arthritis where he couldn't walk anymore probably ultimately what's made him finally give up on life. But it is still the number one source of debility in our society. Yeah. And we don't have really good options. So we do all this stuff. People are like, oh, you know, I don't want to get dementia. I want to have big muscles and I don't want to be fat. And I want to have great sex until I'm 120. And we forget about our joints as a problem. Well, I think they've been pushed to the background.
Yeah. And in a way, aren't the joints, the way I look at it, because I've had a few people come through my practice now with arthritis and been able, frankly, without any of the fancy, like the advanced procedures that you're able to do, we've been able to materially change people's outcome by addressing lifestyle, diet, a few different supplements, and ultimately by lowering inflammation. And so to me, I feel like arthritis very often, it's that canary in the coal mine. It's the symptom sometimes that brings people to the door that says, I can't do this anymore. Like if I can't walk or I can't play tennis or whatever the case may be, like I don't accept the loss of that activity. And yet I feel, and from our discussion, I know you agree that the arthritis is a symptom of deeper stuff, dysfunction happening in the body. And if we can catch it early enough, and sometimes it doesn't have to be like in the first week, like it can be in the first couple of years before things have gone really downhill, we can materially make a difference to how people feel and function with fairly low level interventions. Do you find that? Like, I just think like the arthritis is a symptom of high inflammation, which is going to affect the vascular system and the brain and the heart and the whole thing.
So you're right on. And that is the key. It oftentimes people do come in with, oh, you know, my joints hurt, this hurts, but that's, you know, I don't know that they're thinking, okay, she's going to fix my foot. I think they're thinking, she's going to make me feel better. You know, my foot's going to hurt, but she's going to make me feel better. Or somebody sent you, you and I were talking about your patient who was, you know, sent over by their chiropractor because the chiropractor wasn't getting them better. And they're sort of, you know, not doing anything anymore. And they come over because somebody sent them over, not really thinking, oh, she can fix my ankle. And yet ultimately fixing the disease processes going on in the body did fix the ankle. And that's because what we now know is that, you know, we talk about all the senescent cells and, you know, you've gone through that ad nauseum in terms of, we think about disease process with these zombie or senescent cells causing damage. And people forget that the exact same thing happens inside a joint.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we get something that causes a little bit of damage to the joint. And if we were really healthy, what would happen is we'd get a little pro-inflammatory response for a little brief period of time. So all these pro-inflammatory cytokines would come into play, right? Like TNF-alpha and interleukin-6 and interleukin-1-beta, but they wouldn't stay around. And then they would go away and the anti-inflammatory cytokines come into play and things start to heal. So what goes awry is if I'm not in that kind of state, if I'm in a pro-inflammatory state and I get a little injury, then what happens is I get these pro-inflammatory cytokines and they tailspin. Right. Now we've linked, you know, and there's a lot of things that go along with it. I mean, genetics, right? So if you have higher levels of interleukin 1 beta, or if you have an alteration, what's called the WNT pathway, those things are obviously going to predispose you to this. So lifestyle, genetics, just like everything else, all play a role here. So, you know, an unhealthy lifestyle, not eating, you know, not being in a good alkaline state, those things all play a huge role along with your genetics, and those all come together so that you get these very high pro-inflammatory responses. There's a study that came out about maybe 9 months ago where they took mice and they bred them to have very high levels of something called interleukin-1 beta, which is one of the pro-inflammatory cytokines. And we think it's one of the pro-inflammatory cytokines that's very linked to both osteoarthritis, degenerative joints, and degenerative discs. So we see people have multi-level degenerative disc disease. And they basically, when they had, they took a little tiny pin and they stuck it inside the mouse's disc. And within days, they completely degraded their disc. And what they found is that interleukin-1 beta got inside the chondrocytes, where it caused the cell to produce high levels of something called NLRP3 inflammasome, which you probably talked about because it's linked to a whole lot of diseases, not just arthritis. But in the joint, that NLRP3 inflammasome caused the mitochondria a lot of damage. And the mitochondria, when it was damaged, now produced all those bad reactive oxygen species, which then propagated and killed the next mitochondria. And then that killed 4 more, and that killed 16 more, and so on and so forth. So what they found then is when they blocked interleukin-1 beta and they put the little needle hole in the disc, nothing happened. So we now know that interleukin-1 beta is a pretty big player in a lot of these osteoarthritic cases. So when you look at somebody who genetically potentially has high IL-1 beta, or because they're eating crappy food and not doing all the healthy things, they have high levels of interleukin-1 beta. And now they get a little trauma, right? They fall skiing, they twist their knee hiking, and they get a little inflammation, which shouldn't really cause any significant damage. It heals up. Instead, they tailspin down and they start this whole process. So now these senescent chondrocytes, and exactly the same thing, that zombie chondrocyte damaging another chondrocyte. And it's a big old huge tailspin. So, and now what do? So now they go to their doctor and their knee is all swollen, inflamed, and they stick a bunch of steroid in that, which we know actually has a lot of bad effects in terms of blocking all of the anti-inflammatory cytokines that are going to be helpful as well to healing, right? So we blocked some cytokines with the steroids, but not the ones like interleukin-1 beta that are doing a lot of damage. And we've now blocked all the good stuff from happening, right? And then they told them, now you got to just rest. You got to stop doing everything, because right. Just let it rest.
Right.
Now what happens? Well, once you start resting, you're not producing what are called myokines. So our muscles, we now know, are endocrine organs. Mm-hmm. So every time I exercise, my muscles produce myokines. And myokines have far-reaching effects. But myokines are potently anti-inflammatory. So now I'm not exercising, so I'm not producing anti-inflammatory myokines. I've just put steroids into the knee. I've blocked all the anti-inflammatory cytokines. I still have these high levels of interleukin-1 beta and some of these other pro-inflammatory cytokines. And I've just caused more and more degradation. Except now those high levels of interleukin-6 are causing damage, not just to that joint, but to other joints as well. So that's why you see somebody who starts with one knee going bad, and then their next knee goes bad, and now their hips are bad.
Yeah.
And that's where people get, oh, it just sucks getting old. Doesn't suck getting old, sucks being an inflamed old person. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's why we have to start looking at this whole process completely differently.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. It's a cascade. Like it's
a cascade.
I mean, it's basically how the body works is in cascades, and it's almost like you have door number one or door number two. Are you initiating a healing cascade or a cascade of degradation? And the other thing with the steroids is, don't they at some level like get rid of the pain? And after those people are done resting, they go back to maybe being more active, but all the myocardial
still not fixing the underlying problem.
And
right.
And it causes damage to the tissue. So it's almost like, you know, the pain is a signal to stop using the joint and do something about it. Instead, you've blocked the pain, which is the warning. You go back to doing what you're doing, and then they wonder.
And then you're not even aware that you're doing more damage, right? You're not getting that feedback that, okay, that position wasn't a great thing for me. I mean, I'm not going to say you should go and just push through pain if you have a hurt joint, but there's still tons of exercise you can do around that. You know, I've had a lot of orthopedic injuries, and even day one after the injury, I was out doing something, you know, yeah. I was exercising. There's always something you can do. So, even if it's just, you're doing upper body because your knee is really just too painful at that point, you shouldn't really push through the pain, but you need to exercise. You need to keep exercising to produce all these myokines that are so beneficial in a whole lot of ways, right? We don't know myokines prevent insulin resistance. We know that, we know that myokines increase follistatin. So, follistatin's are muscle building, right? So yeah. Start thinking about muscle as, I think people forget that muscle is a huge endocrine organ. It's why I'm so passionate about making sure that, that I always have muscle and that my patients always have muscle. But the first thing that doctors do is get rid of people's muscle. They sit them around doing nothing. Yeah. And, I would tell you that's the very worst thing. Study came out, I think last year, with rheumatoid arthritis patients who are always just told, rest when you're inflamed. And they found that when they exercised them through their pain, they actually did not see nearly as much joint inflammation or synovial damage. So we know that that's a huge important step, but the other thing is we have to start looking at how do we block some of these. So if I get an injury, and this starts early, if you look at, for instance, you tear your ACL. I tore my first ACL at the age of 18. So what happens when you tear an ACL? 80% of people who have an ACL reconstruction. So this isn't just tearing it, it's reconstructing it. Yeah. Will go on to develop osteoarthritis. So I can predict that 18-year-old is going to be, by the time they're my age, they are going to have an arthritic knee, 80% likelihood,
Wow.
So simply repairing the ACL did not prevent that. And why? It's because most people are in a, not in a good healing state. So if we, instead of just fixing the ACL, what if we do things that we know are going to help the body to not start down this pathway? Mm-hmm. So what we do with all our ACL reconstruction patients, for instance, is we start them on high dose epigallic catechins, EGCGs, which are hugely beneficial in a whole lot of realms, including cancer.
Yeah.
But EGCGs are one of the few supplements we know really well block interleukin-1 beta. Huh. So you can use high dose, like 2 grams a day or even more if you want. If you stay below 4, you don't have the liver toxicity. So basically have them do epigallic catechins starting immediately after their surgery. And now we're blocking all those bad inflammatory cytokines that are going to already start causing cartilage degradation. In all of us, it's going to be an uptick when you have surgery of interleukin-1 beta.
Right.
And then the other thing that's been shown to be super helpful, and we use this in post-surgery, but also in our osteoarthritis patients, is a pharmaceutical drug called pentosan polysulfate.
Yes, let's talk about that, because there's a lot of interest about pentosan polysulfate in the biohacking world, all these people who have like dug through the papers and figured out that, wait a minute, there's this stuff they give horses.
Yeah.
Magical. And we do all these clinical trials on animals and we show that it works. Why aren't we using pentosan polysulfate on people? And then you get a few of them who get their hands on it somehow or other. They find a physician who's willing to administer it, and it literally changes their life. So let's talk about pentosan polysulfate and how it changes people's lives. And does it have to be injected into the joint? Like how to,
So pentosan is amazing. It's really blocking, interleukin 6, it's blocking interleukin 1 beta. It's upregulating some of the really good anti-inflammatory cytokines like interleukin 10. So it really is actually not just preventing inflammation and degradation, but actually promoting healing of cartilage and bone. It's great for bone healing too. There was a study they did in dogs, and subsequently they actually are in process of doing in humans in Australia with Pentasyn post ACL reconstructions, and people healed dramatically faster. Well, dogs healed, but it looks like the people as well healed dramatically faster after ACL reconstructions using Pentasyn, because that bone interface, when you after actually when you fixed the ACL, healed so much better. So Pentasyn has really marked effects. It's actually in Australia, it's a drug. It's made by a company called Paradigm Pharmaceuticals. It's a drug, and the studies they've done have been really dramatic. In fact, they took patients that were headed to knee replacement and they put them on Pentasyn polysulfate, and 9 out of 10 of them did not need the knee replacements. So these were people who were headed to knee replacements, and they had that dramatic of an influence. So they're now considering it in Australia as what we call a DMAO, or a disease modifying agent for osteoarthritis. They're thinking, could it be a cure for osteoarthritis? I think potentially, if you could start people early enough on this, it probably could be. I think, you know, we get a lot of our patients when they're already pretty far down the road, and we're seeing marked improvements in pain. Probably early for us to say, from an X-ray version, are we actually seeing improvement in like joint structure? But we're certainly seeing people have dramatic improvement in activity. I had a guy who was in his 60s, super active guy, tennis player, end stage knee arthritis, and he would not get it replaced. And you know, was starting to have to give up tennis and was really depressed. And we started doing Pentasyn injections on him, and he was back to running within, you know, 6 weeks. I mean, it's pretty remarkable stuff.
Crazy.
So basically,
yeah.
You don't need to inject it intra-articularly, you inject it systemically.
Wow.
So basically, like the peptides, you give yourself a little systemic injection. And we have our patients do it twice a week for 6 weeks. You can, in smaller patients, get away even with once a week. So you do it for a 6-week course, and then you find a sort of a maintenance course. So I use Pentasyn maintenance. I actually give it to myself once a week, but I have patients who do once a month. I have patients who can go for a fairly long period of time. So if you think we're kind of, you know, rebuilding to here, are you going to downslide? Probably a little bit. And so if we can then bring you back up a little bit and bring you back down, it's available. So we can get it made here in the US. It is actually a drug here in the US called Elmeron, but for bladder cystitis, right? For bladder inflammation. So Elmeron has been used orally for bladder inflammation. It recently is under a lot of scrutiny because they found that people who are on high dose for a long time are developing a retinopathy. And so now there's all these lawsuits going on against it. But we're not seeing that with the injectable form, which is also at a much lower dose. So we don't think we're going to have that same effect. We never get to the kind of doses. And really, the people who had the retinopathies with Elmeron were on it for a very extended period of time. And we would never actually hit the doses that they hit with using it as an injectable, because you could use much smaller doses. And interestingly, the oral does not benefit the joints nearly as dramatically as the injectable. So those of you who are thinking you can get this drug and I'll just take it orally, doesn't work. It works for bladder inflammation for the same reason that it's working on joints. But systemically, it has a very marked effect for joint health. It's also some anti-cancer benefits, as any, you know, potent anti-inflammatory does. So we get it, you know.
One more question. So does the systemic application also help the bladder, or we don't know that?
I don't know the answer to that. I think the oral seems to work better, but I haven't really tried it. I don't have a lot of bladder cystitis patients, so I haven't really tried it on that. I actually think it probably does. I mean, if you're systemically doing something, I think probably it would help the bladder cystitis as well. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really had experience with trying it on any patients yet.
Okay. Sorry, I interrupted you. I was just...
It's a good... Get that. There's a big research study going on with Pentasyn for prostate cancer that looks really positive. So it's probably going to have some play for an anti-cancer tool that we'll see kind of come up in the future as well. Mm-hmm. But as you said, this has been used in the veterinary population, primarily racehorses, for quite a long time. And they've used it in dogs too, with really good success. And, you know, animals don't get the placebo effect. So it's pretty easy if something's working to say it's working. Right. And you can see really dramatic influence. I mean, honestly, in dogs with arthritis, it can be amazing. It kept my dog going with her arthritis for a very long time. So it's pretty amazing stuff. And in our realm of, you know, our biohacker world, it's relatively inexpensive comparatively to other things. I know. So we get a pharmacy to make it for us. because it is a drug here, it's pretty easy to have a pharmacist compound it into a form that we can use as an injectable form. And so we use a compounding pharmacy that we trust to make it. I know the question is going to come up from your listeners of, well, if I can buy it online from the veterinary people for my horse, could I just use that? And I don't really know how to answer that. I've never analyzed those. It'd be interesting if you have any sources that can analyze things for you, just to look at purity, things like that, to know the answer to that. But we work with a lot of patients across the country. If you guys are interested in it, you can always call, because we can get you set up for it. I do feel a little safer having a human compounding pharmacy make it for us.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's a really good, simple go-to that you can utilize. And if you have an injury, it's a good thing to get on pretty quickly, because again, those injuries are going to be, each of those little injuries is going to be one of the things that kind of propagates this downhill slide.
Mm-hmm. So question for you. There's a lot of talk also about a peptide, which was originally developed as an anti-obesity drug called AOD9604 that was mm-hmm. magical in animals and did very little for humans, or at least not in a lot of people.
Right.
And so there's a lot of talk about AOD9604 with hyaluronic acid injected into the joint space. Now, this is under imaging by a physician.
Yep.
This is not a DIY project, people. would it somehow complement the pentasan polysulfate, do you think, like in joints that are degraded? Like basically, is it kind of next level?
Yep, that's exactly what we do. Okay. So I love AODHA as well. We usually do an injection a week for 3 weeks, and then we do once a month for a couple months afterwards. So AOD along with a high density viscose supplement, so hyaluronic acid, that's a very dense hyaluronic acid, works extremely well for helping both inflammation and cartilage regeneration. The AOD acts almost like a stem cell effect, since it's basically lysing some of the, remember there's a lot of fat cells inside our joints. So you're kind of lysing these fat cells and creating this almost systemic stem cell like, or this local stem cell like effect in the joint. Mm-hmm. And you can see really, really, so we were involved in the initial research projects with that and patients did very, very well with it. The anti-obesity effects probably on this local, you think kind of locally, has had a very dramatic effect. And it's simpler than taking your own stem cells where we have to, take it out of fat or take it out of bone marrow. It's simpler to do something where you're doing a local injection. And then what we would do is follow that with the pentasin afterwards. Pentasin's only side effect really is it's a weak blood thinner. So if you're going to do surgery or a procedure, you don't want to have the pentasin on board. So you wouldn't start it ahead, but you would start it afterwards. You would start a course of pentasin because, this is one of my beliefs. When you look at why there's this variability between when we do stem cells and platelet cells on people, some people do great and some people don't. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're somebody who's super high levels of something like the interleukin-1 beta or have these alterations in what's called this WNT pathway signaling, if I now stick a needle into your joint, I'm doing some harm. I'm doing some local damage. Well, if I stir up an inflammatory reaction, yes, the platelets are going to have some balancing anti-inflammatory reaction, but sometimes not enough. Sometimes you'll see people actually get worse after they do platelet therapies. So we're actually pretty cautious when we do regenerative procedures on people to actually always use things that are blockers of interleukin-1 beta. And so usually about day 3 after the procedure, we don't want those pro-inflammatory cytokines to be continuing on. So we'll put them on like high dose epigallic catechins or pentasin or both. And we see much better effects. And I don't see those people who really flare up really dramatically, like you see with some of the people. I see people who literally get horrible flare-ups, and sometimes it sustains for months and months, and they don't get any benefit. So I've kind of learned the hard way, because I've done that to a few people, that if you actually go through a phase where you let just a little inflammation occur, and then we really work on upregulating the anti-inflammatory cytokines, downregulating the pro-inflammatory cytokines, you get much better response. So same thing's true with the AOD. Follow that with something that now I'm going to really improve the healing by reducing those things we know. Again, if I stick a needle into a joint, I'm doing some trauma. That's going to cause some inflammation. So that's the approach we take, is exactly what you're saying. Use the AOD. And I do love AOD.
Yeah.
It's a little costlier of an approach, but it's not as costly as stem cells.
No.
you know.
Well, and what you're doing, what's you know, the brilliance of the approach is you're managing the environment that you're applying the therapy to, right? So
right, exactly.
And you send somebody into a burning house, like a contractor into a burning house.
Say fix, yeah.
Walls, guys.
That's a great, I mean, that's a great analogy, right? Yeah. Can you go fix my counters? Well, I don't know if that's going to do any good, but I can do it. So, you know, it'll cost you some money, but I can do it. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what really, when you, you know, when you look at all the docs doing regenerative, because that they're a dime a dozen now, right? And they're doing all these, and these are expensive. You're spending a fair amount of money for these regenerative therapies. And if you're in a really bad state and I put regenerative therapies into you, I'm probably not doing you a whole lot of good. So if you can get the body into a better state first and afterwards, you're going to have a much better effect. So, you know, so, and some, really honestly, as simple as, you know, EGCGs are easy to you know, get and take. And so simple as doing that post-procedure can be really dramatic.
For sure. And, you know, taking it back a step further, and maybe this is certainly when you're healing, but even on a preventative level,
this is where all the logic comes in on getting people on the right diet, getting people in the right lifestyle, even, and I don't know how you feel about red light and near infrared light therapy, but all of these things that, I mean, definitely by the time people get to you, and sometimes even by the time they get to me, like they're pretty advanced in their progress of whatever disease state they're in. But, you know, to people listening to this, if you're sitting there thinking about your Aunt Susie or your Uncle Joe and, oh my God, they or your mother or whoever, think about yourself, because think about how much, and I mean, I'd love your comment on this, like how much can having the right diet and the right lifestyle choices, like keeping those inflammation markers down, even if you have a WNT pathway, you know, like we know that your genes aren't your destiny. So you have right. that propensity towards inflammation. So you don't get the same wiggle room as other people, but you can reduce the inflammation state in your body, which would hopefully prevent that disease from taking hold in the first place.
Right.
Right. And then once you're doing this stuff, I'm sure you're counseling your clients on eating a better diet, sleeping. Like it sounds so, I don't know, it sounds so repetitive after a while. And I don't think we can emphasize it enough.
Right. And getting the body into an alkaline state, I mean, you know, is super important for healing. Right. So I have my patients do urine pH measurements in the morning, and you say, okay, well, if your urine pH is really low, if you're not above 7.3, your healing is not going to be as well. And those are simple things you can change with little, you know, little diet changes, or, you know, some of the things you know you've talked about with molecular hydrogen, things like that. You can do those things. I love, just from my personal experience, I love red light. Yeah. You know, and I know you've had podcasts about it, but I, you know, when I have an injury, if I use the red light, it really helps. You know, and it just, and I just, because I'm cheap, I only have the little tiny one, but the, you know, even that little tiny one I can use, I can put on my shoulder, I can put on me if something flares up. So I love the red light therapy, and I think it's a really useful thing. And I've actually had a few patients who have not been doing well. You know, I put them on all the stuff forever, not been doing well, and I'll throw red light into the mix, and it's kind of the cat's meow of the last little piece for some reason that really helps.
That's
so amazing. I do like, you know, things like that as well. And, you know, and you can get a small red light for not horribly expensive. And I know you've had some stuff on your podcast where you can get discounts on it too.
Well, and there's a new one coming out. They got their first batch out in December, and the next batch was supposed to come out this month. It's coming out in March. And I don't know if you've seen it yet. It's a modular unit. And so it bends. So you can literally wrap your joint in this red light device, a near infrared light, and it delivers, it has three different modalities, either red light, near infrared light, or a mix. And so now you're firing into the joint from three different angles.
Oh, that's cool.
So
yeah.
Not to mention the fact that it's portable, so you don't have to be standing naked in front of
it. Is that the one you did a podcast with?
I did.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
FlexBeam. It's coming out soon.
Okay.
And I, you know, unfortunately I don't have mine yet, and I'm sitting there foaming at the mouth. I'm like, I want my unit, because I know a bunch of people who have them and they can't stop raving about it. But anyway, so all this to say that, you know, and when we started this conversation, you and I, an hour before we started recording, you know, a lot of what we were talking about was this whole idea that And people get sent home and they're told, oh, you've got your achy joints. Well, that's part of getting old. Or, right. you know, or the other thing that we really started talking about is people walking into a doctor's office. And look, doctors are really well-meaning. They do what they know to do. But I have this one client who went in to see a podiatrist because her foot's really sore. She's defined by walking. It's the one thing that she does for herself that we can say is healthy. And she walked out of there after being told, well, you know, here's all the reasons why your foot is poorly constructed and it's affecting the rest of your body and we can't fix it. And so you need to stop walking and you're going to have to start swimming. So you're saying this to someone who is not in their best state of health, who is in the middle of the winter.
Right.
In the middle of a pandemic, there is not a pool to be found anywhere.
She's not going to be swimming, right?
Right.
So now you've just made her sit on her butt.
And you're asking her to put on a swimsuit, which she probably is the last thing on the planet she wants to do ever. And that she can't do the one thing that she does that gets her outside and gets her moving. And my heart breaks for people, right? Because there's so much more. And she's not even got full-blown osteoarthritis yet. He's telling her the conditions are there. So isn't this a person who is on the brink who we could potentially pull back?
Yeah, and that's where it's just so wrong because you know every one of those patients is going to get the same treatment. They're going to go, you know, somebody's going to tell them to stop doing what they're doing. Now you've, again, she stops exercising. She stopped producing these really anti-inflammatory myokines. Not to mention all the serotonin effect on her brain. Now she's depressed, right? So now she's depressed, miserable, sitting around, eating more, and doing, you know, and the harm of walking for her foot, you know, if at least small distances and, you know, with good shoes and good orthotics is so going to be that the benefit of that is going to be, it's so outweigh the downsides to progressive osteoarthritis. It's where we have to completely rethink how we've thought about arthritis. It's not a wear and tear disease. I got to convince you guys, this is not a wear and tear disease. I just did a podcast with an ultra marathoner that, she, you know, she has no arthritis. I mean, but she does all the, you know, the stuff you guys do. And, you know, and she runs, I don't know. I mean, she did like a 500-mile run in the Sahara Desert. She has no arthritis, you know. And then I have people like, oh yeah, well, you know, I was a runner. So of course my hips are bad. No, it's not why your hips are bad. It's not because you tore your meniscus skein. That should actually heal and be okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, I'm a victim of this myself. I've torn my ACLs 5 times before I realized, okay, this is not working to just fix my ACLs. And, you know, and I have end stage arthritis in my knees, but my knees are fine. They feel good. I, you know, and do I run marathons anymore? No, but I still can run on them and I can still do my workouts and I can still exercise, but I'm doing all of these things. I'm taking pentosin, I'm doing epigallocatechins. High dose melatonin is another thing that's hugely beneficial,
you know,
before. And that's so good for blocking interleukin-1 beta too. Two of the things we know block interleukin-1 beta are high-dose melatonin and epigallocatechins. And, you know, you'll hear these things over and over because they're, when you block inflammation, you're helping every disease. So you can...
Can we go back to the melatonin for a second?
Yeah.
When you talk about high-dose melatonin, I have a few questions for you on that one because you've talked about, I think in the first podcast where you spilled me off my chair with this high-dose melatonin business, it's like I had to pick myself up off the floor. You were talking about, I think it was up to 10 or 20 milligrams.
We do 20 milligrams.
People taking it in the morning. So how does that work? And like, I'm a slow melatonin, my pathway for breaking down melatonin is slow, right? So I'm a slow caffeine metabolizer. It's the same P450 enzyme that processes them both.
Right.
So what does that mean to me?
So if you took my dose, like 20 milligrams of melatonin at night before you went to bed, you would probably wake up and be tired at that point in time, right? Just because it's metabolizing it so slowly. We actually think it can really adjust circadian rhythm. So it's going to kind of self-adjust. So I have probably more people who seem to be able to take it at night. So I have them start there. And then what they'll tell you is, look, I could not sleep. Literally, I was awake and then I was sleepy during the day. And so I'll say, okay, switch it around. Try taking it actually in the morning time.
Okay.
And they feel actually great. Melatonin has some very interesting, probably because of its anti-inflammatory effects. And because it, over time, it seems to really restore some circadian balance that it kind of rebalances people out. and they feel they are more alert during the day and they sleep really well at night. So it's a little bit of experimentation with it. And it's interesting because when you say high dose melatonin, it's funny. I was listening to Terry Hertog talk about hormones the other day on a webinar, and he was saying, oh yeah, I never use this more than 5 milligrams. And then he presented this study in infants that were septic, and they put one group of these septic infants on 70, this is babies, on 70 milligrams of melatonin, and the other group of septic infants on nothing. It's kind of a sad study actually, because the ones on nothing, 90% of them died from their septic shock, and the ones on melatonin, it was only like one of them that died. So it was really dramatic. And that was 70 milligrams in an infant. So we know even very high doses are very, very safe. And yet people seem get very nervous about it. And in these COVID cases where they did the melatonin experiments, they're using 70, 80 milligrams of melatonin. So, and I have people tolerate 20 milligrams again, and finding the time of day is a little bit tricky, but I have people kind of all over the board on finding the time of day that seems to work for them, but it's really helpful. It's also such a, yeah, I put all my cancer patients on that as well, because it's so anti-cancer as well, especially breast cancer, prostate cancer, you know, so high dose melatonin and epigallic catechins. These two substances are so, you know, so dramatic. You and I talked about kind of getting back to the base level of a few things that are really dramatic. I mean, you know, for me, spermidine, I take my spermidine, I take my epigallic catechins. I mean, those are two things I'm always on. Because they really work at such a very base level. The epigallic catechins there's nothing you don't want from them. They increase follistatin. So you can actually lose fat, build muscle just from taking, EGCG, because it so upregulates follistatin. So now I'm especially, so now if I exercise, remember when we exercise, we also produce myostatin, which blocks muscle growth, right? So if I can use the epigallic catechins around exercise, well, now I can block myostatin, upregulate follistatin, because the exercise also produces, you know, some regulation between those two. And so I can really build a lot more muscle. And so it's kind of a wonder drug to me.
No kidding. Yeah. And you're saying, you just keep it under 4 grams a day too.
Yeah. And I think for a maintenance dose, you do like you just need like a gram. For a maintenance dose, you do the gram. In my disease states, I go up to higher doses, but and post procedures and things like that temporarily go up to higher doses. It's the only thing you have to watch with it is in a few people, it will bump liver enzymes. I don't see it as much as the literature suggests it does, but I'm a little cautious with it too.
Well, you keep an eye on this stuff, right? I mean, that's
eye on it, right?
Yeah, that's what blood work is for, is to keep an eye on these things. So
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, we were talking about our foundation supplements coming into this talking a little, not that we want to get super off topic on the spermidine, but at the same time, you know, I'll bet you it has its role to play in the disease state of arthritis, that disease progression that leads to arthritis, right? It's such a foundation. It's so far upstream. Like, it's such a foundation supplement.
Yeah. I always joke with people that there's two supplements that probably you can Google any disease and find some article, some in animals. Yes. But to say that it's useful for treating it. One is spermidine. And the other is epigallic catechins. Those two things, you know, just play with this. Google any disease along with those. And so I did. I Googled spermidine with osteoarthritis, and it had some very significant benefits in osteoarthritis. And again, if we look back at this very base problem, which is at the mitochondrial level with oxidative phosphorylation, you know, So remember, as we age with this increased oxidative phosphorylation, and we have these mitochondria producing all these reactive oxygen species, well, we've been tackling it at the stage of get rid of the reactive oxygen species. No, we need to tackle it at fixing the damaged mitochondria. Yeah. That's where spermidine kind of comes in, right? Because it's autophagy or mitophagy of these damaged cells so that they're not producing all these reactive oxygen species.
Yeah.
So instead of working on, all the bad stuff that's happening as we age, we have to fix that process. And so when you look at some of these things that are, you know, working at that level, that, you know, that's where spermidine comes in. It's working at a very base level in some of these very basic pathways of metabolism. Mm-hmm. So you're fixing those very basic pathways of metabolism so that all the bad stuff doesn't happen, because now I fix things at a very low level. So it is one thing now that, you know, as I've learned more and more about it over the past couple of years, that I will sometimes take high doses, but I'm always on at least a milligram a day dose.
Yeah, I'm with you. I, the, for sure, the spermidine, actually, I've even found with my parents, without going to a super high dose, that within a month, they started to notice changes, which is...
I think older people in general, you know, seem to notice it even more. Yeah, more deficient.
Yeah. But the other one, I would add, the third one I'd add to that mix is the molecular hydrogen, because again, it's, and as a signaling molecule, it's addressing a lot of, it's kind of like a mop-up crew. And I just find it's another one that you can, you know, you go to the Molecular Hydrogen Institute, which has no agenda. They don't sell anything. They don't care, but there's over 1,000 studies there.
And it is like,
you just can't, like, it's a,
we can't argue it. Right.
You can't find something that isn't positively affected, and or they do, that there's not some pathway rationale. And now, of course, we have to continue to do, you know, the homework. But just like the spermidine, where you were talking about, you know, for post-COVID patients, seems to be helpful in their recovery. Molecular hydrogen is now undergoing trials in hospitals.
Right, for COVID. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I think it's really, I think that's another thing for these people with this post-COVID syndrome, that using like molecular hydrogen, spermidine, those are really important. Because again, we've got these, you know, what happens is we've gotten so much vascular damage after these, you know, some of these people who got sick from COVID. We're seeing this kind of vascular endothelial damage. You've got to go back again to the very base level to fix that. Yes. So I think that those are two supplements that are hugely beneficial. I was telling you, we're seeing some of our post-COVID patients, these very high myeloperoxidase, which is a marker of vascular inflammation. And you know, we followed them for years and they've had these nice low levels. And now, you know, 3, 6 months, 4 months after COVID, we see these, you know, levels in thousands, and it's like, holy cow.
Yeah.
And so we've been using, you know, spermidine, and I'm sure molecular hydrogen would be good as, or molecular oxygen would be good as well, as, you know, to bring down some of these inflammatory markers.
You were saying you were seeing levels come down after a month.
Yeah.
Or so, right. But now you're doing very high dose, which, you know, guys, if you want to do this, I think, you know, reach out to a practitioner or the Boulder Longevity Institute, because you guys are dealing with people all over the place.
Yeah.
You don't want to just willy-nilly start to chug.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the high dose spermidine, you can only get, if you want to get it as a higher dose, they're actually coming out with a sort of a physician only dose in March for physicians to be able to prescribe, because they're finding that, in these cases of sick people, we need to be doing these higher doses.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so all really great stuff. Okay. So let's go back to I think we've kind of done osteoarthritis, but when you know what, here's the last thing I'll ask you. When you're talking about getting the body into an alkaline state, and this is another rabbit hole I'm kind of going down. I showed you my electric yellow drink before we started today. And we talk about the role of minerals and mineral balance in the body. Do you look at that at all? Or how are you counseling people if they're showing up acidic? How are you helping them to become more alkaline? And
So we do some, and again, probably hair mineral analysis is probably the best way to do it. And I know that you recently looked at that. And we don't do a ton of that. I probably am a little bit more in the realm of lots of times when I see those people, because there's so much going on with them, again, kind of start back at a very base level. So lots of times there's things I can sort of figure out from even looking at sort of balances, like looking at albumin levels and things like that. And I can sort of make some sense with some very basic blood tests before I get to some very expensive things. We will do some micronutrient profile analysis on patients, and intracellular analysis on patients. But lots of times you can glean a whole lot of information when I just put together things like mean cell volume, albumin levels, what is their alk-phos. I can get a little bit of a sense of this is pretty indicative of low copper, low zinc imbalance here, imbalance there, but with some $12 tests. So I try it as much as I can, just because our patients do spend a lot of money, to try and simplify that and go to the bigger gun tests when I have to. Yeah. So lots of times we'll start from the very basic things, to look at labs where you can actually, you know, if you put, it's like putting together a puzzle, right?
Yeah.
If you see enough of these little things together, you can kind of glean what mineral might be deficient.
Yeah.
So it's what's kind of fun about medicine, is actually if you know enough, you can put together a lot of information from some simple data. And then, you know, we will very simply oftentimes, we use a lot of sodium potassium bicarb. We use it as the easiest way for people to take that is just Alka-Seltzer Gold.
Wow.
Alka-Seltzer Gold is, you know, it has no aspirin. You have to do the gold because it does not have aspirin in it. But that's just a sodium potassium bicarb. You do two a day and you'll see significant improvement in their urine pH. You know, and again, I have them measure morning urine pH, and they can sometimes, you know, they have to do it every day for a while, and then they can go once every other day. But it's really pretty dramatic, and just using that as, you know, a very simple tool and a very inexpensive tool to help alkalize them while you're trying to work on fixing all the other underlying pieces. I mean, I think certainly mineral dysfunction, you know, but people like you who have done all the basics, and then you have to get to that higher level on people like you who maybe still have issues going on. But most of our patients are coming in, sometimes they're pretty simple. We got to get back to, you know, to some very basic things.
Sure.
And we try as much as we can to do things without. There's so many. I have people come to me. We have people who run companies that come with, you know, literally they've had the whole body MRI scans and they've had every freaking test in the book. And I have really a book this big of labs and, you know, that they've had done. And they're like, I don't know, even know what to do. And I go, well, let's just look at your CBC and your CMP and we can figure out a whole lot of stuff. I mean,
look at whether you've got red blood cells, white blood cells and albumin going on. Let's just see what's happening at a base level.
You know, I mean, it really is true. I think we've gotten so caught up sometimes in getting all this fluffy data that we don't even know what to do with. And if you go back to a very basic cell level, you don't need nearly as much lab data. It's absolutely funny, when I was shooting out a question, I ordered some lab on a patient that I got, and I literally came back really weird, and I didn't even know what to do with it or what to make of it. And I sent it back to a bunch of my mastermind group, and I said, "Yeah, what does this mean?" Everyone's like, "Why'd you even order that?" And I'm like, "Well, because I, you know, I was reading this," and they're like, "Yeah, just ignore it. Go just treat the patient."
Eating like a clean, just give up the donuts. You'll be fine. Which sometimes, you know, we kind of have to start, but I just love it. I love that you've got this really sophisticated kind of Boulder Longevity Institute. You're doing these amazing procedures and somebody comes to you and their pee is too acid, and you're like, just pop a couple of Alka-Seltzer Gold today, and you're golden. And it's like, but you know, but it's, I think it's a testament to your integrity that you're not afraid to go to the simplest, cheapest, kind of lowest level intervention. I mean, yeah, we've got lots of toys and fancy supplements and procedures and this and that, but And I think, I don't know. I mean, I just see that as a sign of a professional who's like, how do we just fix it? Like, it's not about making another 10 grand off this person. It's like, how are we just going to help them in the easiest possible way to get to move the needle here? Right. And
yeah. And honestly, there's so much to do and so much to offer, but we do, you know, we do have to respect that, you know, it's a lot of time, energy, and money. And so, you know, there's so much we can do with very, very simple tools, you know, and that aren't going to be hugely expensive, that people have sometimes abandoned and forgotten because of all the fancy, shiny objects that are in their face. And so we really do try and help just teach people some of that basic stuff. You know, like you said, you had your arthritis patient who, you know, what'd you recommend? It was like three things. And he was like, oh, I'm better. And you know, he was at the stage where somebody's talking about doing all these dramatic procedures, and you know, you changed his diet, added a few things, and he was like, oh, okay, I'm good.
I can go back to the playing tennis now. Like, and I was like, you can? You know, I was sitting there trying to figure out how am I going to get him to you? And anyway, it's and you know what, I think it's a testament to the power of the human body. And if we can figure out the lowest level interventions and give it what it needs and kind of get out of the way to a point, not that you need the pentosan polysulfates and like all those things have a place, but
They're all helpful, right?
You know, but have you done the work? And to your point of what you were saying earlier, have you cleared the landscape so that whether it's the body or the interventions you're going to bring in can actually take hold and do their thing? So, I think that to people listening to this podcast, the bottom line on osteoarthritis anyway is don't take somebody's word for it, that there's nothing you can do, that it's you're done, that you're heading for replacement. like refuse that and believe that this is a disease state that in some way can be impacted. It obviously it depends how far down that road you've gone.
Right.
But it can get better and you can make it better.
Yeah. And start getting that, you know, start rethinking. So for all your listeners, you know, one of the paradigms I really want to push is start rethinking that thought that this is a, you know, a, just a degenerative wear and tear process. It's not, it is a disease process. It's just, we know that people with osteoarthritis have higher levels of cancer. They have higher levels of dementia. Well, why is that? It's because that same inflammatory process going on that's causing the osteoarthritis and targeting that is affecting other things. So it, this is a disease. We're learning that more and more and more. And your orthopedic surgeon is not going to tell you that because their ultimate goal is to get you to the joint replacement. But, you know, but even, you know, your young listeners start thinking about that because your first injury that you, you know, you tear your meniscus on a ski slope, you're starting that process. And so you've got to intervene then because that whole inflammatory process is starting. You know, and if your body's not in a good state, and I will tell you, there's a lot of, you know, I've got five kids and they're pretty healthy because they have me as their mom, but kids are, I mean, they eat shitty and they drink alcohol and they, you know, and they're doing a lot of bad stuff. And so you guys are at a very high risk. You're always actually in an inflamed state. So you're a 20-year-old who tears his ACL on the ski slope. You better be thinking that, you know, at 50, I'm going to be really screwed unless I start doing something now to prevent that tailspin. So we're working with very high level athletes at young ages. I mean, I have 16-year-old, you know, tear their ACL. I'm going to get them going on some stuff because I can tell you that 16-year-old's not in for a good course otherwise. Yeah. So I want your young listeners to start thinking this way because I think we think about degenerative arthritis as an old person disease. And it's starting at 18, at 16, you know, so that's really, we have to start changing our focus is treating those injuries mm-hmm. in a preventative fashion. So it's one of our goals, you know, at Boulder Longevity with our Human Optimization Academies, we're trying to actually get the young people to start, you know, we have a lot of young employees and we're trying to get the young people in the door because honestly, that's where it's, that process is starting, you know?
Yeah, I love it. Actually, you know, and we'll leave it. I have one story to tell you. As you're talking, it's what you said earlier about how the inflammation and the degradation in one joint is going to drive the same in other joints. I have a very good friend who was at the Olympics. Like this goes back a long time. She was a slalom skier back in the day of Nancy Green. I don't know if you remember Nancy Green. Anyway, and the night before her event, the coach decided they needed to blow off some steam. He sent them all out to play soccer. Well, didn't she slip on the ice and destroy one knee, destroyed it. So she had to be flown out of, I can't remember what country she was in, back to Canada for emergency surgery. She did the rehab, the whole nine yard, went back out and did the other knee. And you wonder, you know, like you wonder in that, you know, as much as the surgeons did everything they could to repair the joint, right. Whatever, if there had been more attention paid to your point about addressing the systemic inflammation and state caused mm-hmm. by that one injury, if maybe the second joint wouldn't have, because she didn't have any problems with the other.
Right.
Like there was right. no, and she was young and the whole nine yards, and that basically ended her career, obviously.
Right.
But anyway, so it just made me think, you know, like, and I hopefully you've got more forward-thinking therapists and doctors
right,
that, care of these athletes now to help them to understand. And, you know, like the life of a downhill competitive skier is a sight to behold.
Tough.
Yeah. They're traveling, they're drinking, they're doing all the things. So anyway, so it just that story came and all of a sudden I was like, oh, maybe that's why her other knee blew.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I'm in some boat. I tore one ACL and then tore the other knee's ACL. And then I tore the same knee's ACL again. And then I tore the other knee's ACL again. And, you know, finally, after fixing those four times, I was like, screw this. I'm not going to fix it. I didn't tore them again. I'm like, then I started realizing that maybe I better actually be healthier and start, you know, and now I just brace my knees and don't have ACLs and I do fine.
Yeah, exactly. Just forget the ACLs. We can hack this. All right. Well, listen, Betsy, this has been phenomenal as always. Thank you so much for your time and your generosity. Why don't you tell people where they can find you, how they can reach you? Because I think anybody would be fortunate to get to work with you. So how do they find you?
So if you just go to BoulderLongevity.com, Google Boulder Longevity Institute, it'll give you all the information. Also, you guys, we're trying to really work on our learning arm. We have something called Human Optimization Academy. You can sign up there and, you know, get access to we're trying to put out lectures to explain this stuff a little bit better so that people have kind of a clear sort of consolidate data for you, put it together in a place where you guys can understand it. So sign up for Human Optimization Academy and keep listening to Natalie's podcast, and I'll hopefully be back.
Oh, you'll be back. Believe me. I'll be on the horn to Susan right away. All right. Well, thank you so much.
I love talking.
Great. Bye.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.